This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Alright folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Not so full studio today, but some of the usual suspects. Vizana, how are you doing?
Good, thanks, and you, Tara?
Good. Lawrence, how's it going, man?
All good.
And George, how are you?
All perfectly fine.
Everybody have a nice weekend?
Lekker weekend.
It was good. The weather was fantastic.
Absolutely. Especially where I was.
Compared to the weekend before, when it got so bloody cold. I think summer's finally here.
Well, apparently this Wednesday is going to be a scorcher.
Scorcher, yeah. And I'm even driving here this morning, you can feel the temperature's up. It's nice and early.
Yeah, yesterday afternoon sat and enjoyed it, you know, and just kind of opened up the doors to outside.
Yeah.
It's nice and cool in the house, yes. And you know it's a scorcher outside. So. Yeah.
Fantastic, man. Good stuff. Well, let's get straight into it. And I think the big news out of last week is that the 2019 Auto Trader South African Car of the Year semi-finalists have been announced. And in my universe, not too many surprises from the 33, 34 odd vehicles that were put forward as qualifiers.
No, pretty much what I expected to see there is on the list.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, we wouldn't be doing the competition justice if we didn't sit and debate these cars for a little bit. And let's run through the list of vehicles, and this is in no... let's just run through them in alphabetical order. But the first semi-finalist is the Alfa Romeo, the Stelvio.
Brilliant car.
Is it a good car? Is
that absolutely cracking.
Is that the same one? No, you didn't drive that one, did you?
Mm-hmm.
No. And then the Haval H9. And I think...
Just as cracking.
But that's the first time that there's a Chinese manufacturer in the competition, if
yes.
I'm not mistaken.
And it is very well deserved to be
yeah.
there.
Well, I mean, we did that review and you guys spoke so highly of it. The next vehicle that made it through was the Honda Civic Type R.
Oh, yes.
Which I've heard is a bit of a... Is it a pocket rocket, that thing?
Hooligan mobile.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Have you driven it?
Yeah, I drive it.
And you?
Yeah.
And lovely.
Lovely, lovely car. It's not a car that I would own.
Yes.
But... If I wanted a pocket rocket,
yes,
I'd go for this over the GTI.
Oh, would you?
It's an enthusiast's car.
Yeah.
Enthusiast's car. The next one, also out of the Honda stable, is the Honda Amaze.
Budget entry. Well deserved.
Yeah. Then the Hyundai Kona, also on the list there. And then out of...
We actually have the Kona on test this week.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, Chad's busy driving it.
Oh, okay, fantastic. Well, maybe we can get an understanding of what that's all about on his return. Jaguar E-Pace and the Land Rover, Range Rover Velar.
Yeah.
Both in there, out of the British stables. Lexus ES.
Yes, absolutely. I had that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw that parked outside the office. It looks like an amazing vehicle.
It is, absolutely.
Really, really nice to drive. And then the Mercedes-Benz A-Class, which I think is a...
We covered it last time.
We did cover it last time.
Yeah. Strong. I mean, I'm not... I know that Lawrence likes it, but I don't know. I don't know if I...
I haven't driven it. I wasn't on the launch, and I didn't. Martin drove it in Cape Town.
Yes.
So Martin is head over heels over it. But I think we're getting it next week, so we'll have that on test, and I actually get to drive it. And
you can tell us.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. You know, after they changed the shape, I don't know if they've really knocked the lights
out of it. Yeah. The next thing is the Mitsubishi Pajero Sport. I've only heard good things about this car. The Nissan Micra is there, and then two from the Opel stable, the Grandland X and the Crossland X have made it through, which is fantastic. Porsche in the running again this year with the Cayenne, and then Renault with the Renault Duster and the Megane RS.
I don't know if you've... I'm picking that up today.
Oh, are you?
So okay. We're from here straight to the office, and I'm climbing into the RS.
Pocket rocket.
Another pocket rocket.
Well, and it's the one out of the three that I would have, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I see. Is that why you got such a big smile on your face?
Oh, yes. I've been waiting in anticipation for the last 2 weeks.
And then from Suzuki, too, the little Swift and the Jimny, which I thought was obviously going to make it. I think there's been a lot of hype around the Jimny.
So
I'm glad to see it there. You guys drove that. You were on the launch last week.
Yes, I was. And Martin is in one of the test vehicles currently.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got another one coming just after that.
And just quickly, I mean, what was it like to drive?
Absolutely amazing where it belongs.
Yeah.
It is a cracking machine off-road.
Yeah.
but that's where it belongs.
Okay.
So it's I have...
is it a toy?
It is. It is like a Toyota 86. This is not the kind of car that you're going to buy and drive it to work every single day because you're going to end up hating life.
Really?
Yeah, the 86 like you take to the track, the
like
Jimny...
Wrangler.
Yeah, the Jimny... That's your weekend 4x4 toy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then...
Next car, that XC60, that is my favorite toy.
Is that your favorite toy?
You know, for me... I'm hoping that the Volvo XC60 wins.
Sure.
And I'm with George on that one. I had the Volvo XC60, and that is the car that if I had the money, I would be replacing my Tucson with.
Really?
It is just that good.
With this XC series, Volvo has knocked it out of the park. I'm yet to see an SUV with the amount of technology that this thing's got.
And what about the XC40? Because that's just
a baby version
of it. And yes, it's exactly why I would have the XC60 over the 40.
What is the price difference between those two?
It's quite substantial.
Substantial.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So I mean, those are the 20 vehicles that have made the semifinals. George, I think we know where you're going to put your, where you flag putting your bet in.
That's
there. Fazana, is there a car here that you think, does it stand? That is there a vehicle here that stands out for you that you think would take the competition?
There's a lot of good cars here, so it's tough to just pick out one.
Yeah.
Come on, pick one. Pressure. First one that comes to mind.
I really like the Duster.
The Duster.
Okay. Yeah.
You can change your mind next week.
Yeah.
The heart says Jimny, but the brain says XC60.
Heart says Jimny, the brain says
XC60.
I
just think that XC60 can do what the Jimny can do.
It can, actually. At Festival Motoring, they had XC60. They had some XC60s up at the 4x4 course.
Mm.
And those XC60s took that 4x4 course on
properly.
And it did exactly the same as all of those big 4x4s were doing. The only thing it didn't do was that 45-degree incline down the mine shaft. Other than that, because of departure and arrival angles and bumpers and stuff.
Yes.
But sand, the axle busters, the works, it did it all.
And I really don't have a clue. I mean, they're all good cars. So, but if I had to,
and that's why we have the testing days next.
That's exactly why we have the testing days, and those are in March, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah. So these cars will now be put through their paces. Well, the next stage is they trim it down. They trim it down to a top 10, I think it is. Sometimes 12. You never know.
Depends.
But and then from there, those cars are put through their paces, and
they'll pull the fleet,
all the
media fleet, and that those cars then get sent to the jurors,
mm-hmm.
so that they can get a little bit more handsy on with them, and then next year we actually do the full 2 days of mandated testing, and then it goes to.
I think the one thing that we need to just discuss quickly as well is that it's in the history of the 33 years of the competition's been around. This was the first year that we opened up voting to the public to see what their opinion would be on selecting who they think their top 20 should be. George, and I don't know if you want to comment on this, but I know having spoken to Ruben, who's the chairman of the guild, he was very, very surprised that the votes that the consumers gave were very, very close to what the judges and the jury had picked.
Yeah, I mean, the more volume you get in, statistically, the closer you're going to get to the right answer.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that we got over 55,000 votes, and we only did that over, a two-week period?
2 week period, yeah.
Imagine we had done like a month, 2 months.
Exactly.
We did that over a 2 week period and look how close it was.
Yeah.
So, the public opinion is important.
Absolutely.
And it's not about a popularity contest. It's just have a look at that result and you can see, the public's not that dumb.
They're not that dumb, exactly. We do have educated
like
automotive audience.
Every single one of us
are
members of the public.
Yeah.
And I think you're smart enough to judge a car time. I mean,
yeah,
you drive one. You've
been
driving one your entire life.
Well, exactly.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
You don't need to know how... what diameter the piston
has, or the firing order,
in order to say, well, this car suspension is actually shit.
Yes, exactly.
Like you don't need that technical information in order to do that. So, I think it's a welcome good surprise.
Absolutely. So over to and the finalists are announced within the next 2 weeks.
Next week,
Tuesday. I think
Tuesday, Wednesday. I think so, yes. So, just to add, it wasn't actually the jury members who selected these finalists. It was the entire guild.
Yes.
The entire guild votes on what they want. So we actually have, I'm speak under correction, but it's about 420 odd guild members who vote.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we've included that with the public vote. And
to be fair, all of the guild members are professional, could be judges.
Yes.
So it's not like the judges didn't vote on the cast.
Absolutely.
They actually did because any one of those 450 could have been a judge.
And it's funny because in order to be a judge for Car of the Year, you have had to be a member in good standing for a number of years.
Mm.
You had to have done 2 years of trainee juror, and then only under through a process of voting do you get awarded the title of judge. And so it's not just you're going to be a judge this year, off you go. There is a lot of
process
behind becoming a judge.
Yeah.
You got to know your stuff.
Absolutely. So if you do want to stay up to date, you can follow all of this information on our website under our news and reviews section, and we will definitely keep our audience up to speed with what's happening. And I must say, so far so good. The competition's running smoothly, and I think we're very excited as a brand to be involved as a title sponsor for a competition that really is a part of South African automotive history.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Right. Moving on. Vehicle quality in South Africa. Top car brands in the country revealed. I picked this up this morning. So Ipsos. Yeah. Toyota has grabbed 13 gold awards in the latest Ipsos Vehicle Quality Awards. The Ipsos Vehicle Quality Survey was conducted throughout Southern Africa in 2017, involving survey feedback from 7,000 owners of vehicles from 16 car brands. Toyota achieved 13 gold awards, 7 for passenger cars and 6 for LCVs, and from 16 different categories. In 2016, the Japanese automaker scooped 9 gold awards. Volkswagen was the runner-up with 8 golds in 2017, collecting 4 in the 2016 survey. Other gold awards winners were in 2017 were Audi with 5, Isuzu with 3, Honda with 3, Nissan with 2, Opel and Ford. And these are obviously, this is build quality, am I right?
No. The quality of the vehicle only makes up a small percentage of it. The rest of it is basically based on customer experience through dealerships and service centers.
Oh, right. Okay. So this is when you've taken your car for a service. And then
so you bought your car, you're happy with your Toyota, and now it's time to have it serviced.
Okay.
It's how you get treated, what the quality of the service was when you took the car to the service, to the dealer to have it serviced. And I think we've actually chatted about this before, where we've said that so you've got the guy to buy the car. Yeah. How you treat him after he's bought it is going to reflect in a very, very big way on whether he decides to buy another one in 2 years.
Correct. Time. That's where you convince him to stay with your brand or not.
Toyota is very
good at doing that.
Very good at that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just got to look at the number of Toyotas on the roads. Am I right?
People buy them and they get treated well. You become part of the Toyota family.
Yeah.
And that's why Toyotas are multi-generational vehicles.
Yeah.
Volkswagen is also very good at that.
Absolutely.
You can see, and it reflects in the awards. There are brands that you would expect it to do very well.
Mm.
Mercedes-Benz is nowhere to be found.
Yeah. Interesting, hey? Such a high-end vehicle.
Vehicles are good.
Yeah.
How their customers are treated at different points and service centers and stuff, that drags them down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lesson out there, and OEM should be reading this and going, well, yeah, maybe we're doing something wrong.
Okay, yeah. Well, look, I mean, I also think, there's a complete difference between a Mercedes-Benz driver and a Toyota driver. So maybe the, the expectations of each driver is very, very different in terms of what they want.
Well, there you go.
Silver knives and forks and cups of tea in the morning, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, guys, I don't know if you know, last week, obviously there's been quite a bit of chit-chat around, no one's an advocate for drunk driving, but I don't know if you've seen the proposed amendments to the, to the law in South Africa. And basically what was thrown around last week is that they want to implement a system where you will sit behind bars for 7 days before you can get your application for bail. And they want to increase the severity of the fines from a Schedule 2 to a Schedule 5. And that would put drunk driving on the same playing fields as rape and murder.
I say do it.
Yeah.
Well, I think so too. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I got no sympathy for drunk driving, so it can make this as harsh as possible.
Absolutely.
That's a good thing.
So the only issue here is the Justice Project South Africa chairman, Howard Dembowski, has labelled the mooted proposal for the 7-day pre-bail jail police for drunk drivers as an absurd and crude attempt by the Road Traffic Management Corporation to abuse South Africa's well-established and legally sound bail process. And I think where his issue's coming in here is they're saying it has widely been reported. Basically, they want to make all traffic offences reclassified to Schedule 5 offences. So that would mean that even if you park your car incorrectly, you could be dealing with this. So they're saying all traffic offences.
No, that's a load of rubbish.
Well, I mean, no, I don't agree with that.
No, I'm all for it. Look, if you drink and you get behind the wheel of a car,
it's a weapon.
You are engaging in attempted murder.
Yes.
And if you crash into somebody, it is
attempted murder.
So, well, it's, yeah, off to jail you go. But yeah, I don't care if you spend the next 6 months in there waiting for a bail application. Mm. No, that was a choice you made. Yeah. We have Uber, Lyft, Waze. We have so many options that you have. You do not have to get behind the wheel of your car if you've been drinking.
Yeah. I
think that's right.
And choose a designated driver.
It's a weapon if you think about it. You know, you're getting behind the wheel of a
machine,
piece of metal,
yeah,
that is being propelled forward at a rate of knots.
Yeah.
Same as a bullet.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, you can't excuse that. You're propelling something in forward at 120 kilometers an hour and you're not in control of it.
Mm. Yeah.
So, once again, brilliant idea. How are you going to execute it?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it?
You can't even get guys to pay traffic
fines.
I think a
couple of people going to jail is going to cause a bit of fear.
Yeah.
So hopefully this works.
Yeah.
Yes, the policing's a problem and we need more visible policing. But if you get caught, it's going to potentially happen. So just that risk,
yes,
for me, will deter.
Do you remember a few years ago, I'm not really sure which society it was, but they tried to do that. It's just before Christmas, the anti-drinking, don't drink and drive. It was the Ek Wag Vir Jou Papa.
Oh, yes.
Those prison inmates.
Yes.
That year, drink driving went down.
Down, yeah.
People were, a minute.
Yeah.
That
I think it was a Rava Lava, and they ran a TV campaign.
Yeah.
And they got the guys from Polsmore too.
And it is exactly that. It's that. It's instilling fear.
Yes.
It's the...
Yeah, and they rolled it out in pubs. They had them behind washroom doors, behind the toilet doors.
Ek Wag Vir Jou.
Ek Wag Vir Jou, Papa.
So sure. Go have another beer.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, hats off. I did quite a bit of driving this weekend out towards Bella Bella.
Hmm.
And I must honestly say that when you talk about visible policing, there were traffic cops every, I don't know, 10, 15 kilometers, if not more. It was amazing.
No, that's absolutely brilliant. Let me tell you the flip side.
Yeah.
Friday morning, I'm trying to come here, and I try and drive out of my area. There's a frickin' roadblock.
Right up. Oh, really?
Right on the on-ramp to the highway in peak hour traffic. So, yes, I'm all for visible policing, but the economy's got to frickin' function.
As
don't
well.
Do it in peak hour.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. I mean, who are they going to catch...
Well, I mean, maybe they caught some people. I don't know.
Check or
it was a proper roadblock on the on-ramp, which is, I think, is silly.
Yeah, we call them the kangaroo courts.
Yeah.
It's basically that little camera on the tripod.
Yeah,
you drive past it, check your number plate down, and says, oh, you got outstanding fines.
Mm.
Mr. Policeman pulls you over, and you either pay on the spot or you don't leave.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no. So yes, in your instance, brilliant. Absolutely right.
Just nice to see them on the side of the road, because then you're more
aware
of
were they stopping traffic?
Yeah, no, they weren't stopping traffic.
So they weren't creating a roadblock.
No, there was no backlog or anything like that. They were obviously pulling people over for speeding. I mean,
11 o'clock at night, people are coming back from clubs and drink driving and all that stuff. Yes, absolutely. Flip and close the highway for all I care.
Yeah.
You know, I think that should be done, but not in peak hour traffic.
Yeah.
So, last week,
yes,
I was on a whole bunch of vehicle launches.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Suzuki KB and Suzuki Jimny out in the Lowveld.
Mm.
And it was exactly that. On the launch routes that we drove, every 30 kilometers, there's the boys in brown sitting under the trees with a camera.
Yeah.
And they were just, everybody who they caught speeding, pull off.
Fine.
Fine, send them on their way.
Absolutely.
And Yeah.
No, that's fun.
And people out there on those roads, which are absolutely beautiful driving roads.
They are amazing driving roads.
Everybody was driving the speed limit.
Absolutely. And it's actually nice to travel when everyone's traveling at the same speed, proper following distance.
Not overtaking on blind rises and blind corners and solid white lines.
Yeah. But you see that on the weekends, and to your point, George, then you drive to studio on a Monday morning and it's chaos and mayhem with people.
Well, there was the N12 was a sort of nightmare this morning. It looked like there was a truck hijacking or something, because they had two lanes blocked off with yellow tape and there were a whole bunch of vehicles parked at funny angles. So whatever it was.
Anyway, visible policing, it does work. I see Cape Town are considering a 24-hour traffic cop plan. So with road accidents expected to increase during the festive season, the city of Cape Town is mulling a 166 million rand 24-hour traffic service to make roads safer and to clamp down on lawlessness.
Is it visible policing?
It's pretty much policing.
Absolutely brilliant.
Works for me.
I mean, yes, but it costs a hell of a lot. But I mean, what these costs go to, I mean, they unpack it in the article. Based on 24 inspectors and 240 traffic officers to serve the four regions of the metro, an amount of 166 million is needed. 72 million would be spent on salaries, 2.6 million on uniforms, firearms would cost about 2.6 million, and radars about 2.1 million. Altogether, 61 million is to be spent on vehicles and general operational costs. Fuel, stationery, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I think...
That's lovely. You know what? Spending the money in the right places, in my opinion.
No, well, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Not into the coffers of who shouldn't be getting the money.
Yeah, I agree.
These policemen, school teachers, the public servants need to be paid.
And paid properly. Well. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, you know, so...
Because then they won't ask for bribes. You pay them properly, they're not going to ask for bribes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A bribe.
Have you seen that ad, George?
Absolutely love it.
Yes. Who is it? What brand is it? What car brand? Is it a car brand?
I'm not sure.
Is it?
Yeah. That's good advertising.
It's brilliant. So these cops pull this guy over in a bucky, and it's not Nando's, but it's parodied. It's
how many bribes do you do a day?
Yeah, bribe. Anyway, okay, cool. Quick question. I saw an article that Anae wrote, and you could probably, I mean, we can get around this. And I remember being young with my mom and dad saying, okay, cool, you know, we need a new battery for the car, but you had to hand your old battery in before you could get a new battery.
Yeah.
And battery recycling and stuff like that. I think, I don't know, have batteries changed over the last 20 years?
Well, no, you still hand your old battery back, and they do give you a rebate. For the carcass, because obviously it's, you know, the lead and the plastic and stuff is worth recycling.
Not so sure
about the lead, but today's batteries, a lot of them are sealed. You can't service them, you can't do those things with them anymore.
Yeah, so when it's done,
you hand it back, you put a new one in.
There are a bunch of places a little bit further south from us, Vereeniging, I think. Yeah, there's a couple of places where all your old batteries go there. And they basically grind them up, separate the lead from the plastic. Plastic goes for recycling. The lead is melted down again turned into giant blocks, which then go off to different manufacturing places.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of recycling. The stuff that you're throwing away ends up in something else. And can you imagine what would happen if nobody was recycling car batteries anymore? And even the new sealed ones, they still have lead in them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's
and sulfuric acid.
When you break down the individual parts, that stuff is recyclable.
Yeah. So interesting. I just picked that up, and it's quite an interesting little article that on there, right? So
you can go and the thing is, if your old battery is useless to you anyway, so why not, when you go and put a new battery in your car, give them the old one, get the rebate,
yes,
and you don't have to worry about the thing clogging up the corner in the garage.
Absolutely, and there are companies that will fetch and carry.
Do people actually hold on to their old batteries? What for?
Doorstop, paperweight, I don't know. But there are people who, they're hoarders, they just don't let things go.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's pretty much out of the news and reviews this morning. Gentlemen, unfortunately, I didn't get to see it, but it sounded like it was quite an interesting Grand Prix. So, George, I'm going to hand over to you. Give me the lowdown, please.
Well, Verstappen should have won that race. That's the first comment, or Verkrashen. Because he was leading by miles, and the Red Bulls were very strong. I mean, Ricciardo came up from, I think it's 11th position, and he cut through the field like a hot knife through a butter.
Yeah.
And Verstappen should have won, but guess what? Verkrashen crashed into a backmarker. Oh. Then after the race, on television, he goes and he confronts Ocon and gives him a shove.
Oh, really?
So now I just kind of like I think it's ludicrous, but so now what he's been ordered to do by the stewards is public service.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has to go and do some public service for 2 days for his hot-headedness. But, you know, he was also at fault. The guy is, you're lapping him.
Yes.
You don't need to get in his way. Just, he was 4 or 5 seconds ahead of Hamilton. He really didn't need to race this backmarker. The backmarker was trying to unlap himself.
Okay.
So the backmarker was trying to pass Verstappen so that he could unlap himself because it gives the backmarker an extra lap at the end of the race.
Yeah.
Just let him go. It's fine. It's not going to break anything. Crashes into the guy. So anyway, Hamilton won, and Verkrashen came second. And then that gave Mercedes-Benz the constructors' title.
So is it done, and, done dusted, and dusted in the bag?
Yes. One more race, and but it's done and dusted at this point.
Jeez,
yeah, we were watching the highlights back here in the office.
Yeah.
I, of course, because I was busy the whole weekend, I also missed the race. But it, yeah, when you watch the highlights package and you when that little collision between Ocon and you're like, what were you thinking?
Really, it's a
and then of course then they've got the team radio playing in the background and it's just beep 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 as these so you can I didn't see the shoving match, but
yeah,
understandable.
And Vettel apparently had I saw an article this morning about he was commenting about something that was loose in between his
yeah, it was quite funny.
Quite humorous.
Yeah, it was a bit humorous. You go and check out that video where where he says, well, if it was what you guys are suggesting, then I'd be proud, but it's not. but there's definitely something loose hanging down between my feet. Yeah.
Okay.
Something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing, but it was quite funny. And he's taken, losing the championship this year with any stride.
Yeah.
Hopefully next year Ferrari gets their act in order. He gets his head in the right space. And one thing I did notice over the last number of races is Hamilton constantly has a performance coach next to him. I don't know if you've seen that blonde lady. I don't know what her name is. She's constantly with him. And she keeps him focused, absolutely focused on what he needs to do. But I don't see other drivers having that sort of support.
Yeah.
And this could be the reason why Hamilton is so consistent, is that his focus is just
on winning
spot on all the time, and he thinks about nothing else.
Well, I mean, what do they say? Consistency is king, right?
Yes.
And that's what he does. He shows up. It sounds like he shows up to every single race, whether you like him or not, but he is there to win, and he puts in a solid performance.
Absolutely.
You know?
Now, I would, I support Ferrari no matter what the driver is.
Sure.
So if they change drivers, whoever the lead driver is, that's who I support. So this Vettel at the moment is the guy. But if I had to support a driver, and I can't even believe I'm going to say this, it would be Hamilton. He is that bloody good.
Good,
he is that good. I mean, I don't like his attitude sometimes, and I think he's grown over time. But, but he is damn good at what he does.
Yeah.
Love him or hate him, you've got to respect
what he does.
Yeah. So there's one more race, and that is in the Abu Dhabi on the 25th of November.
It always ends there.
Okay.
And it's going to be a bit of a procession because there's nothing to gain by any of the teams. So I would imagine the teams are going to use this race almost as a to test different things.
Okay.
Real race conditions.
In real race conditions.
Because it won't really matter who wins and loses. Although, in saying that, I've got to kind of pull that back a bit and say, depending on where they are in the points, is how much they get
their payout.
Payout. Okay. Yeah. So it is in their best interest to get as many points as possible. But I would imagine they're going to test some stuff.
All right. Fantastic. And I suppose, like you say, I mean, would they put new? They won't put new engines in the car. No, I mean, if they've got them,
they'll probably test things like aerodynamics, different wing settings, maybe
fancy wheels.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens. Right. Let's move from where were we in Brazil to India, but New Delhi bans trucks as the mega city chokes. I actually thought this was, I mean, this is crazy. I don't think we realize how much pollution we actually put out into the universe. You know, it's
they're just one of a number of cities around the world that have banned trucks and diesel vehicles from city centers.
Yeah. So basically, Delhi authorities have imposed a 3-day ban on trucks entering the world's most polluted major city, as its 20 million inhabitants wheezed in the toxic annual winter smog. With levels of air pollution classed as hazardous, the restriction on the nearly 40,000 medium and heavy lorries that enter Delhi every day was imposed. This was last week, Thursday. And It's just ridiculous. On Friday, the levels of particulates, 2.5 micrometers or less in diameter, the most harmful to human health, peaked at 845, according to the U.S. Embassy website that monitors air quality independently. So pretty much we are killing ourselves. Vehicles on the Delhi roads generate roughly 20% of these tiny particles in the air, which can be absorbed into the bloodstream, and they're linked to chronic bronchitis, lung cancer, and heart disease.
So it's not as if many of the transport companies in India are running brand new Scania and Volvo trucks.
No, exactly.
Some of those guys are running trucks that are 40 years old. Yeah. And those things don't have diesel particulate filters. No. And they don't have very efficient engines. Mm. And so, yes. And
it's just like seeing those old trucks on the road that you still see every now and then on our roads that belching, just bellow out black smoke.
And, you know, Joburg is nowhere near as crowded as Delhi.
As Delhi, yeah.
And if you have seen the Joburg city skyline on a Monday morning after it has rained the weekend,
yes,
the sky is clear.
Yeah.
Mm. By Friday, there is that brown haze just hanging over the city, because we're also in a bit of a depression, so there's no air that blows through here. And it, can you imagine that times 70 million? Yeah,
exactly. Bring on the electric cars.
Absolutely. That's why I went, well, where's
hybrids.
Martin's lucky he's on a launch, huh?
Yeah. He is on the launch of the G63 G-Wagon,
which is V8, V10.
Giant G-Wagon. So do you think he's wearing all black? He's got a chain around his neck this morning. He's got his cap on backwards. Uh-huh. He's pimping it. I bet you can see Martin like that. You can't.
No, he's just there enjoying the big engines and the no brakes.
Yeah, exactly. So another really cool story then. This is actually out of Johannesburg. The Gauteng Department of Roads and Transport introduced its cargo electric bike pilot project at the weekend, in an initiative that was 12 months in the making. Launching in partnership with the German federal government, Innovation Hub, Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, and the Anywhere.Berlin team, the electric-powered bike moves goods and is envisioned to provide a cost-effective, safer, and greener solution in the freight distribution system. And basically what these guys are talking about is, once the truck's offloaded at a depot or whatever it is, the inner city movings to get goods and services to and from businesses and people should be done by these electric cargo e-bikes. And basically what it looks like, if you can imagine putting an extra, I would say, a meter and a half in between, if you take a normal bicycle, saw it in half, all right, you're going to keep the handlebars with you, so you're sitting, but then you've got another meter and a half, yeah, exactly, another meter and a half in front of you, and then you've got your front wheel, and there's a platform where you can put stuff on. You know, these bikes have been introduced into the system, and I think it's phenomenal, because
where's Santon?
Santon, so where, and I'll tell you now where they,
because I'm guessing Santon, Rivonia, thereabouts.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I'm like, you know, concerns me is pushing a load versus pulling a load. This is pushing a load. Okay, because the load's in front of you, right? Because the handlebars are here, the load deck, I mean, I'm looking at the photograph.
Yeah, you're pushing it.
You're pushing the load.
Yes.
I would imagine that load is, you know, because I'm assuming that the front wheel still turns to turn you.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
So you can imagine you turn a corner, you lean, and the load's in front of you. Now you've got to push through that corner. I think there's more chance of instability
than if the load was
at the back of you.
I can just see some barreling down Corlett Drive with some bricks on the front of his bicycle, and
I promise you now, that's what we're going to see. I mean, listen, half of the reason why they've done this is,
it's a brilliant initiative. I think it's a bit back to front.
Yeah, so they introduced this e-bike. Oh no, it was in the Sharpeville Township in partnership with a non-profit organization, Shop for Kasi Development Project, based in that area. But the guys that are doing those, I mean, you all would have seen them, these guys that go and collect, you know.
Our intrepid recyclers that love to go downhill with no brakes.
Absolutely. And you know what, I'm all for them, because what they do, they're actually doing something that is, clean up, that is good for the environment. So, you know, and the fact that, I mean, can you imagine, I mean, and the loads that those oaks haul must be heavy. You
know, but they're always in front of the load.
That's also true. So I don't know why they didn't
take it. Like, why do trucks have trailers at the back? Why is a trailer hooked to the back of your car?
Yeah, not in front.
Like, this, I don't know. This is a great initiative. I think it's back to front.
Well, they might just have to rework it. I don't know. Maybe it's worked elsewhere.
Yeah, it could have. I don't know.
Who knows?
I'd love to find out the theory behind it.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I didn't even think that far, George. But that's why you are where you are, and that's where I am. Why I am. Anyway,
I don't even know what that means.
No, it doesn't mean anything. So I think this is really cool, and I think these e-bikes are going to make a difference. And I'm just glad that they're going to distribute these and give these to these guys, because I'd much rather see a pedaling up a hill than pulling that load. And I'm sure they'll work it out. You know, these guys, our oaks are so inventive and entrepreneurial.
I reckon it'll work, but it's a bit inefficient in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we're going to see what happens there. Right, Lawrence, let's get into all the different things that you've been driving the last week. Yeah. You have been super, super busy, haven't you?
Yeah, it's the end of the year. OEMs are pushing to get all their product out. So, yeah, I was on three launches this past week.
Yeah.
First one was the Isuzu KB.
Okay.
Not KB anymore. Basically, Isuzu has dropped the KB nomenclature. It is now called the D-Max.
Oh, Isuzu D-Max.
We're the only country in the world that still uses KB. Everywhere else where Isuzu is sold, it's called the D-Max. So they've just killed off the KB name, and it's now the D-Max.
So same product, just different name.
So, yeah, it's the same old double cab that we all know and love. They changed up the headlights a bit and made the interior a little bit more user-friendly. So there's some leather soft-touch surfaces and, you know, some fake aluminium. And then they added a 6-speed gearbox, manual and auto. So not really much has changed there. They've just a little bit here, tweaks in there, made the vehicle a little bit, and then renamed it. So, yeah, you're going to be paying $606,000 for one of those.
Sure.
My opinion hasn't really changed. The Isuzu is still a workhorse.
Yeah.
And whether you slap some soft touch leather on it and add an extra hinge in the back
doesn't really make much of a difference.
It's still the blast bucky of choice.
And they're still going to go up against the likes of what the Ranger and the Hilux.
But as I said in my story, all you have to do is walk through the parking lot of any industrial show, things like NAMPO and Electromining.
Yeah.
It's Isuzu's all the way. Isuzu's the guys know. Yeah. It's a hardy product.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if anybody wants to go and have a look, they should be on showroom floors by now.
Uh-huh. Fantastic.
And then the day after that, I was back in Nelspruit again, and we got to drive the new Jimny.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
Probably one of the vehicle launches that we have been waiting for since the spy pics hit the internet.
Okay.
We saw them at Festival of Motoring, but we weren't allowed to drive them, because the ones that they had there were Eurospec models.
Okay.
So the ones that we finally got to drive, and yeah, it was everything we thought it would be. Absolutely cracking off-road, amazing vehicles, and the price, just amazing. And then it was a little bit of a letdown on the road,
because
the automatic gearbox that they decided to put in this thing was a little bit bipolar.
Okay.
It couldn't really decide whether it wanted to be in second gear or fourth gear.
Okay.
And, you know, I think that's something that they need to work on, but other than that, it's...
Does it come in a manual?
Yes. So there's three models available. There's the GA, which is the manual everything.
Okay.
It manual gearbox, manual windows, manual aircon, manual everything.
Okay.
Doesn't have all the nice trimmings that the GLX does, and the GLX is the one that we saw that in the kinetic yellow and the blue and the ivory and the jungle green.
Yeah.
Has the nice mag wheels and the plastic interior with all the fancy trimmings. The GA comes in at $264,000.
Okay.
Which is good money for a toy.
Yeah.
And that's the one I said. You know, if that's what you're going to be buying this thing, that's the one you're going to use.
Mm-hmm.
The GLX manual and auto. The auto is about $20,000 more expensive at $319,000.
Yeah.
But it's still an absolutely amazing vehicle and such a step above the previous generation.
Yeah.
They really have.
Yeah.
You know, we waited 20 years for a new one.
Yeah.
And it was worth the 20 years wait.
They were spot on. I wonder what I mean, I honestly cannot recall, and I mean, I don't obviously mix in, you know, the same circles that you mix in with the, but for me, this there was something about this vehicle where it was on the, you know, the tip of everybody's tongues.
And it what was did, that. Because we waited.
What did Suzuki do right to make everyone get so excited about this little vehicle?
You see, I have this theory that they purposefully released the Spypix.
Ooh.
You're a conspiracy theorist.
But it worked. Because now everybody's going, oh, look at this, the new Germany, this is so cool, it looks like a mini G-Wagon, and it's comparing it to a Wrangler, and they really, and they sort of just sat back and let it run.
Yeah.
And then at the launch, they sort of set us straight, because everybody was saying, oh, it looks like a little G-Wagon, and then we told, yeah, the Germany came out in 77, the G-Wagon came out in 81.
So is the G-Wagon a big
Germany? It flowed the other way. Yes. So they, but other than that, you know, they made us wait 20 years for a good vehicle.
Sure.
Okay. And it was cracking. And I have... The only negative thing I had to say about it was my issue with the automatic gearbox.
That's it.
Other than that...
Now, is boot space something that... I mean, when you're buying a car like that, you're not buying it for its boot space, right?
No. These are... I said it in my story as well, that the Jimny is like a Toyota 86.
Okay.
You're not buying this car to daily drive it. And if you are, you're a certain kind of sadomasochistic kind of person. So they are toys.
Yeah.
You're buying this as your second car.
Okay.
To indulge in your particular hobby, whether it be attacks, track racing, off-road racing.
Context is important there. I mean, you could, if I owned a beach bar in Durban and that's all I did all day.
No, absolutely.
The Germany's your car of choice.
Every freaking day car, because I'd have my surfboard on the roof. Yeah. I'd go in my board shorts and pluckies to my bar, you know, do business for the day. I mean, I'm sure I'm talking to, you know, Ty's long-term vision.
Yeah.
George is painting a dream, really.
But then the Germany would be... You know,
and the thing, I'm just really glad that it was selected as one of the finalists.
Yes,
which sort of says a lot about the car as itself.
Yeah,
it's a brilliant car, and I'm hoping that it does very well at Car of the Year. We'll have to see where they finish, because it's a really stylish car.
Yeah, really
which brings me on to where I was this weekend.
Well, hang on a sec. I just want to say before you say that is that yes, I'm going to be driving the Jimny to my beach bar, but I can tell you now, hand on heart, there are two other cars that I've always wanted in the driveway, and one is a 1960s odd split window old VW
Passion Wagon.
Passion Wagon, absolutely. And then I would love this new California Coast. This is what these guys are driving.
So this weekend, with Volkswagen Commercial Vehicles, spent the weekend in Graaffreinet with the entire fleet of VW's People Movers. They had an old split window VW bus that they pulled from the museum down the road.
Yeah.
And the guys were all over it. They were in it. They were opening the windows, arms out. The guys were having a jaw. And parked right next to it was 2019 Caravelle Coast, which is the camper van. It has the roof that opens up with a bed in it and the seats that swivel. And it's really, really cool. Then they had the California, which was the white and red two-tone paint job.
Yep.
And then we had the Combi, the Caddy All Track, and the Caddy Crew Bus.
Where is David Kramer when you need him?
We got to drive all of them on the different little excursions that they had us run and everything. A lot of these, I'm going to take the Caddies out because the Caddy All Track is basically like the cross polo version of the Caddy.
Okay.
Raised suspension, so you can handle the dirt roads and stuff. Caddy Crew Bus is exactly that; it's for transporting people, and the Combi very much the same. Airport shuttle.
Yeah.
The California and the Coast and some of the other Caravelles that they had there, I would refer to them as boutique vehicles. Mm. When something costs $1 million...
Well, that's what I was going to say, $1,061,000. I mean, that's its retail price tag, and I'm sure there's extras you can bolt on.
That was the... So what was really cool about these is the interior. You have like a little round table on rails that you can slide up and down the floor. And the two front seats swivel around 300, so you can go all the way around, and so you can actually play a game of cards in the car.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Plenty of space and really, really comfortable. So we got to experience these cars have been on sale for a while, so they weren't actually a launch, but we got to drive their entire fleet of these People Movers.
Yeah.
A really, really nice weekend, and got to see parts of the country that most people would never would.
Mm.
tiny little towns like New Bethesda and
really cool
and so that that was a lot of fun. And
I mean, are you getting your money's worth at $1 million?
And that's the problem. I can understand why they cost as much as they do, but I can't as a consumer, somebody who would be looking at a type of vehicle like this. I can't justify $1 million for one of these. I would buy two Hyundai H1s for that kind of money, and I would probably end up having a better drive, if you know what I mean. So that's why I say they're boutique vehicles. It's all about the image and the look and the California surfer with the roof racks and the surfboard and everything.
I think it's part of society's challenge today is, you know, we buy shit for other people so that we can portray this image, and then what's happening is those people are making us work 16 hours a day in order to give them some kind of image. Why?
I don't know why.
Because
I mean, I look at this, and I've always been a huge fan. From from the combis of old to the combis of new, I would rather go and buy an old combi.
Yes.
For let's call it 50k.
All right. We're just throwing it out. And then do it up over a year or two or three.
And do it up over a year. Drop another 100. So now you're in for 150. 50, and then take the other 850k.
And you'll probably turn more heads too.
The split window that they had on display.
I bet you now that was the most popular car there.
It was.
Absolutely.
We had like I said, the journalists were crawling in and out of the thing, all over it, arms out the windows. We're having an absolute jaw. And then found out that they borrowed it from a museum down the road in Krasny called the Recollection Rides.
Okay.
And this guy has we actually went there and had a look at what he has, and quite an extensive collection of very, very rare automobiles.
Sure.
Wow.
What he was wanting for that bus was pretty much what you're going to pay for a new Caravelle.
Oh, really?
That was the price tag on it.
Wow.
He had some stuff there that had price tags on it. It was a 911 Porsche that everybody sort of just...
1984.
911.
That is the last, some of the last of the air-cooled models. That is the most popular Porsche.
When it says for sale and then price.
POA.
Yeah. If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
He had some beautiful motorcycles there also, some old BMWs, some really old 1930s Chevrolets and that type of stuff. Really cool. We've got a whole bunch of pictures on Instagram feed. So
fantastic.
If you ever want to go have a look there, they're there.
There.
But yeah, very, very, very busy. And then, I think for the next 2 weeks before we start winding down for the end of the year, there are a whole bunch of launches and stuff that are still happening. We've got, I think, Kia Sportage. Martin's on G63. There's a whole bunch of others. I can't actually remember them all because my calendar is so packed.
Well, anyway, I mean, those will all be up on the site.
We'll have a lot to talk about the next show.
Fantastic. Happy days. Good stuff. Right, well, into our tech segment, and I see that Tesla has a new chairman.
Yeah, so Robin Dalholm,
however
you say her name, Robin Dalholm has been appointed as Tesla's new chairman of the board. Yeah. And this comes off the back of Elon Musk saying dumb things on Twitter.
Yeah.
Now,
smoking weed at 420.
Could be. And so she's been appointed after a court outcome that said Elon Musk is not allowed to be the chairman anymore. Well, for at least 3 years. And so she's been appointed. It's a full-time position. So it's not like it's part-time. A lot of chairman positions are part-time positions. It's a full-time role. And Elon Musk is not allowed to go near that role for 3 years, but he can remain CEO.
Okay.
So hopefully, you know, she kind of gatekeeps him a little bit because he's damn smart, but his mouth is too loose.
So
he single-handedly took the share price of that company down. And this is why this has happened.
So what was he going on about? Because it wasn't about he was taking the company private or public. Sorry.
Yes. Well, no, he was gonna take the company private.
Yeah.
From being private, so he's gonna privatize the business.
Okay. All right.
And which was an absolute load of hogwash. You know, and he had no substantiation, no basis, was he trying to do some negative marketing? Who knows? I mean, I think he's a brilliant man. He just needs to kind of hold himself back a little bit.
Yeah. So I see, and she's ex Telstra, which is an Australian telecoms company.
Yeah. So hopefully that role, and then they're also they've also been instructed to appoint independent directors.
Yes.
Now, I mean, boards of companies are there to be the you know, help the strategic direction as well as, you know, keep the CEO, you know, not in, in check, I suppose, but help the CEO kind of like run the company.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you know, the CEO's in the business, working in it, on it, for it.
Yeah.
And the CEO needs some sort of sounding board, and that board plays that role.
Yeah.
The trouble is he was CEO and chairman. And oftentimes as the company gets bigger, that becomes too much power, and where you can say stuff like this on Twitter, and you're not held to account. Well, now he's been held to account by a court.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I think it's all a good thing for Tesla, because if Tesla goes under, you know, it'll be a sad day in the world.
I think it will be a sad day. I think there are a lot of people that would like to see him fail, but I'm still all
It's because we've got people in society who just, you know, can't deal with other people's success.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's sad. But Elon Musk must kind of like, you know,
he must actually just
chill out.
I think he must just carry on doing what he's doing.
He's not in Pretoria.
Yeah, exactly. Just build us electric cars and get them all over the universe. I also see he had to pay quite a hefty fine. Was it $20 million?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think $20 million touches sides with him, but it's still $20 million.
If I remember correctly, what happened on social, he actually went on a show with some American comedian called Joe Rogan.
Yeah, the Joe Rogan show.
And was smoking weed. Mm. And post that,
said
some really stupid things on Twitter, which you would sort of attribute to somebody who'd been smoking weed.
It's like drunk dialing.
And then...
Yeah.
So same effect.
He thought he was being funny and ended up causing a near stock market crash.
Yeah.
And
well, he's
nice being wrapped up. Yeah. Wrapped over the knuckles.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Man. I mean, you know what? You know, all this could be very, very good for him.
I think it will. I think it'll grow him. You know, he's and this is you know, very, very big kind of sign of too big too quick.
Yeah.
You know, running out of cash, trying to keep the momentum going, doesn't know what to say, and then starts to say stuff like this.
Yeah.
So where does that leave SpaceX and all that other stuff that he's busy with?
No, he's, I mean, he's still involved in them. This is only Tesla because of his comments about Tesla.
Okay. So it actually has nothing to do with all these other side projects.
No. Well, so I don't know if SpaceX is a side project.
Jeez, like, I mean, how does he do it?
I mean, well, if you've looked at his schedule, he spends, I think it's 2 days a week at Tesla and 3 days a week at SpaceX.
Okay.
He works 7 days a week. Yeah. He does 60, according to his own rhetoric, he does 60 hours a week. He works 60 hours a week plus. So, you know, he's a machine. He's an absolute machine. But I said a couple of weeks ago, it looks like he's burning out.
Yeah.
And that's why these things are happening. If I look at his weight gain, his demeanor, he's sweating a lot. If you'd see him, he's not in a, he doesn't look like, I don't know what his health situation is, but it doesn't look like he's in a healthy place.
Yeah.
Personally. And it could be just overworking,
too much pressure, exactly.
Not eating right, not exercising, all the stuff that you need in order to keep up that kind of work schedule. I'm not proposing or promoting the fact that he should work any less, because he's successful as a result of that. Work harder than anyone else, even if you're average in intellect, and you'll beat everybody else. You just got to keep your health up.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't look like he is. It looks like he's burning out.
What are the chances he's going to do a Steve Jobs on us?
Well, I mean, you burn yourself out like for that long a period of time, you're going to end up getting something and kicking in the bucket.
Your body can only go for so long.
Far, yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So,
you know, South African boy, very smart, but I think he needs to take a real hard, good look at himself.
And spend a few weeks in the Maldives.
Yeah, go on a retreat or something and just go and relook at, how did I get here? How can I keep it? How can I keep it going? He's got an opportunity now with his new chairman.
Absolutely.
That is an opportunity. It's not a negative in my opinion.
I think it's a good thing for him. Anyway, moving along, I see Paris region plans to launch a large fleet of electric bicycles in a state-funded scheme aimed at getting commuters to cycle to work and obviously reducing congestion and pollution. And they want to provide up to 10,000 e-bikes for long-term rental, with the view of expanding the scheme to 20,000, which would make it the world's largest e-bike rental program. And this is not a program where you get the bike on the morning, you swipe your card, and then you dock it at night. This is renting that bike for a month,
rent,
3 months.
Rent to own. Yeah. Park it in your own garage.
Yeah, yeah, you pretty much keep it. Yeah.
No, I think it's a brilliant initiative. You know, by and large, can probably only be done in places like Europe.
Yes.
Because the, you know, the cities and the towns are very close together.
Yeah, and people live in them. And so
then, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's a brilliant initiative. Would we be able to get away with that in Joburg? Probably not. Our commuting distance is too far.
No, I mean, listen, you might be able to roll something like this out in the CBD where people are, you know, maybe within a 5 or 6K radius or living in the city, you know, that whole kind of rejuvenation.
The smash and grabbers wouldn't have to smash any windows.
No, exactly. That, but, you know, nowadays I'll just take your tires and they'll steal the battery out of the bike. So,
All jokes aside, I think it could work in a dense city.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, South Africa's not like that.
No.
You know, most people commute.
Yeah.
And they commute for biggest distances.
Big distances. We live far away from where we actually work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, we'll see what happens there. But I think it's a good thing, to your point, George, as well. Yeah, really, really good. And then Ford test tech to keep cars moving. The Ford Motor Company is testing connected car sensor technology that would allow vehicles to navigate intersections without having to come to a standstill. So long story short, you can pretty much eliminate stop streets.
You should be driving like this anyway. Okay, you know what I often see is people, they're up your ass,
yep,
driving like, you know, they're driving a Honda Type R,
yep,
and then you get to the next traffic light and you cruise through the intersection and they've been waiting there,
yep,
for the robot to turn green,
yeah,
and. You know, so I try and drive like this generally, is anticipate not having the car stop.
Yes.
And the biggest safety thing in South African roads, the biggest thing you can do is actually just don't let the car stop moving.
Yes.
Because a human being can only sprint at what? 30 k's an hour, 25 k's an hour?
For
a short burst.
Yeah.
If you're doing 30 k's an hour in a car, you won't suffer from smash and grabs, potentially. You won't, because
your fuel economy will be better because you're not stopping and starting.
You're not stopping and starting all the time. So all of that stuff plays a massive role in safety as well as fuel efficiency. Do not let the car stop, but you've got to drive slower and anticipate in order to do that. So I think this is brilliant, and people should be doing it naturally anyway.
Absolutely.
So just to clarify, this tech, the cars talk to each other.
Yeah, so it's got that vehicle-to-vehicle technology, and the cars...
And this is what we need.
Yeah,
because if we are on a track to self-driving cars, Martin said it not so long ago, we need cars that can talk to each other and to the infrastructure.
Yeah.
So if the car's talking to the robot or to the intersection, and the car's talking to the other cars in the intersection, no more collisions.
Yeah,
and it's the next step towards having completely autonomous motor vehicles.
Absolutely. I think that is a good note to end the show on. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. Vizana, thank you very much. We're very quiet today. Okay, listen, guys, we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time. Have a good week, and that's it from Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace.
This is CliffCentral.com.